Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to this IBM Processor Value Unit and Subcapacity Licensing Overview. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Roger Kerr. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Jamie. As Jamie said, my name is Roger Kerr. I'm part of the Software Business Strategy organization within Software Group, and I team with folks from the Software Group Pricing and the Passport Advantage teams to work on our licensing strategy in the distributed systems. We have a few of them on the line tonight, and I'll introduce them in a moment. But first, I just want to make sure you all know where to go to get the charts. So if you go to the internal subcapacity licensing webpage, on the right-hand side of that page, there's a box that says Seller Essentials. And the first link under that is for subcapacity resources for IBM sellers. If you click on that link, it'll take you to a page, and down about three-quarters the way down the page or so, you'll see seller training resources and the training for the April 7th, 2009 announcement, and the link is within that paragraph. Again, go to the main subcapacity licensing webpage for the internal. Click on Seller Resources, and you'll see it down there just a little bit down the list. Also, if you can't find that page, feel free to ping on same time Carlos Belloc. That's Carlos, C-A-R-L-O-S, and Belloc, B as in boy, E-L-A-K. And with that, Carlos is obviously one of the folks who's joined us, and he's the manager of distributed software pricing within the software pricing team. And two of his folks, Steve Salaveria and Rajan Krishnamurthy, have also joined us tonight and will be helping to answer questions when we get to that part of the call. So if you go ahead and move with me to the second slide, the agenda slide, we'll start off and I'll cover a little bit of background about what we see happening in the marketplace today and a little bit about licensing to the core. Then we'll get into the heart of the call, which is first about the new PBU announcement, the rating for the Intel Xeon processor, which was just announced a couple weeks ago in the marketplace. It's known by its code name, Nehalem. And then we'll move on to the announcements we made last week for subcapacity licensing. We made a number of significant enhancements there. We will cover those and also tell you about a letter that is being sent to all Passport Advantage customers. Finally, we will end with a brief look at Oracle and some of its comparisons in the licensing world with a focus on the subcapacity system. They made some significant changes that look like they're going to hurt Power 6 and Z systems, and we want to make sure you're aware of those. So let's go ahead and start by moving to slide 3 and take a look at what we see happening in the server marketplace today. And there's really three things that are important. The first is that although we've had multi-core chips in the x86 space since 2005, we've seen that they've really ramped up the ability to increase the performance of the cores with the introduction of the quad core last year and then the Nehalem quad core this year. Of course, we'll speak more about Nehalem in a few moments. But what is really going to be happening from your customer standpoint is when they do a hardware replacement, it's quite typical for them to replace a two-socket server with a new two-socket server. The old two-socket server might have had either one core or two cores on the chip, where the new two-socket server is going to have most likely four cores on the chip. So without doing anything else, they will have doubled at least the number of cores that are available to the middleware, which could have an impact on software licensing. So we're going to see, in general, the average x86 server sold in 2009 is going to have eight cores total. That's two chips with four cores each plugging into two sockets. So that's the first thing we see happening. The second is this performance improvement that we see happening beginning with this Nehalem chip that was just announced by Intel and we'll cover that in a few slides. And finally, the other significant change in the marketplace is the significant increase in the adoption of virtualization technologies on our customers' servers. Some of this is being done purely to try and cut costs. Other customers are doing it as the first step toward cloud computing, but it's going to begin to improve the utilization on these servers, which has traditionally been very low, in the 5 to 10% range on x86 servers. So we expect to see that utilization increase over time as they consolidate servers through the use of the virtualization technology. So just want to remind you that what the virtualization technologies really do for our customers is to restrict the capacity that's available to our middleware and therefore limit the amount that they have to pay for our software. So those are the three key trends that I wanted to cover. And let's go ahead now and move to remind you, move to the next slide, slide four, to remind you why we license to the processor core. I know we've covered this in a number of calls over the last few years, but we continue to get questions about it. And the first thing I want to make sure you know is that we have consistently defined a processor as a core. As you know, there's a lot of confusion in the marketplace about how to define the term processor, but we have been very consistent from the earliest days, always defining the processor as a core, and even when the first multi-core chip came out in 2001, that was an IBM Power 4 chip, in those announcement letters, we defined a processor as a core. However, a number of other vendors, led by Intel and AMD, and quickly followed by Microsoft, all changed their definition of a processor from a core to a chip or a socket in 2005 with the introduction of the multi-core x86 chips. But that brings up the question, why have we continued to license to the processor core instead of changing to a chip or a socket as a definition? And fundamentally, we think it provides more granular licensing, allows the customer to have more flexibility in the way they architect their systems and the way they design the number of licenses that they need to have. Really gives them the opportunity to minimize their software costs. Also, as we take a look at licensing in a virtualized environment, you'll find that many of the virtualization technologies define a virtual CPU as a core, and so by aligning our physical licensing to the core, it makes it much easier to align our subcapacity licensing with what goes on within these virtualization technologies. Now, we've come up with an analogy that we hope helps you understand this. So most of you probably follow one sport or another. If you're not a sports fan, you can easily think of this as a series of tickets to the symphony, to an opera or something. But there's a lot of events around the world that take place that have a series of games that are part of the particular sporting event. It could be the World Cup football. It could be the NCAA college basketball playoffs in the United States. Just a whole series of events that take place over a number of days with a number of games or portions of that event, each of which require tickets. So if we licensed like some of our competitors would like us to do by the socket, that would be equivalent to saying if you want to go to that sporting event, you have no choice but to buy a season ticket, you know, for the entire event, every single game, whether you're interested in them or not. Now, for some of you, that's going to be terrific because you really would like to go see all those games. But many of you have particularly favorite teams. You really only want to see them play, and you really don't want to spend the money for tickets to all those other games. But if instead of forcing you to buy a season ticket, instead we let you buy a ticket for only those games you're interested in, that actually comes a whole lot closer to what we do for our customers with licensing to the core. It really says you only have to purchase licenses for those processor cores, that unit within the hardware that actually executes the software that run our middleware. So it gets much more granular, meaning that the customer can pick and choose exactly where they want to run it and minimize their software costs. let's go ahead now and move to slide 5. And I want to urge you all on this slide that our customers use the word processor all the time, and it isn't always clear what they mean. So we'd like to encourage you to try and always clarify what you mean by the term processor when you use it as you talk. So as I've mentioned previously on this call, you know, a number of the other vendors like Intel and AMD and Microsoft changed their definition of a processor a few years ago. And people get confused when we use this word. So what we'd like you to do is make sure that you add another word after the word processor when you talk. So I mentioned before, we define a processor as a core. So when you're speaking from an IBM software point of view, it would really help your customers understand our perspective if you'd say processor core instead of just the word processor by itself. Or there are times when your customers are using the term processor to mean a socket, and when you want to make sure, let them know that you clearly understand what they're saying, say processor socket or processor chip. But then when you want to talk about the core, if you say processor core, putting those two words together, it makes it a whole lot easier to ensure that clear and complete communication's taken place. And always, as you know, the real question fundamentally from our licensing point of view is how many processor cores are on the server. So by always modifying that term processor, you are more likely to get the correct answer from your customer and therefore help them get the right number of licenses. So with that, let's go ahead and start talking about the first of the two big announcements we've made this month. And this will be on slide 6. The title is the PBU announcement, Intel's new Nehalem chip. So Intel announced this new member of their Xeon family, that's Xeon spelled X-E-O-N, pronounced Xeon. They announced this chip on March 30th. The code name that everyone in the industry had known it as and had written about it in the trade press was Nehalem. And they've made a number of significant changes to this chip, which lead to it to have much better performance than any of the previous multi-core chips in the Xeon line that they've had there since 2005. So as of the time they announced it on March 30th, it becomes the standard Intel processor in their line. So we'll still have a few more weeks where some of the older Intel processors that were replaced by this announcement will be coming through the different systems vendors. But for the most part, any systems that your customers buy after April 1st this year, if they're single or dual socket, will, for all intents and purposes, have Nehalem chips in them. Now, this chip is going to be available in a dual-core and quad-core versions this year. And according to the trade press, we expect to see 6 and 8 core versions of that chip come out in 2010 and 2011. Now, what makes this a little more interesting from a PBU licensing perspective is that although it's significantly faster, as I mentioned, they continue to use that Xeon brand name. But because it is so much faster than the previous multi-core chips that have used that Xeon brand name, we have really given them a bargain in only raising the PBUs to 70 PBUs for this particular processor core technology. So what I want to do is now move to the next slide, slide 7, and let's talk about why we think this is such a bargain for our customers. So when you look at slide 7, there's three graphs on this slide. The leftmost graph really talks to the performance story. And if you go back to early 2006 when Intel's first dual-core processor was in the marketplace and you compare that processor core to what's on this new quad-core Nehalem, you'll see that they've almost improved their performance by 200%. So very, very significant performance increase. So the customer gets the benefit of all that extra performance when they install a new processor running the Nehalem processor core. While we've only increased our PBUs by a factor of 40%, small increase against a very significant performance improvement. But what that really means is that we're fulfilling the promise we made back in 2006 when we announced PBUs, that when new processor families were introduced into the marketplace, we would ensure that they saw price performance improvements when they installed them. And if you take a particular unit of work, you can think of this as an individual workload or the amount of work that can run on one of the old chips, one of the old Xeon processor cores. When you take a look at that particular unit of throughput with the new PBU rating at 70%, we've actually cut the price per that unit of throughput or for that piece of workload. We've cut that price in half. So that's a real bargain for our customers. It gives them a significant price performance improvement. And I think really, as you can see, gives us a good reason to reduce the discounts that we offer to our customers for the software, because they get so much more bang for the money they spend for our software when they run it on these new Nehalem processor cores. So with that, let's move to one final slide, because as I've mentioned, this is slide 8. As I've mentioned, this new Xeon processor core, whose code name was Nehalem, continues to use that Xeon brand name. And that's going to lead you to need to have some additional information from your customers when they tell you that they have an x86 server that they're installing. You're now going to need to know the actual model number of the Intel processor inside the server. Now, Intel's made this a little easier for us in that they have a series of model numbers that are dedicated just to this Nehalem chip. Now, at the moment, you'll only see model numbers that start with 3,000 or 5,000. The 3000 series are for their low-end servers that have only a single socket in them. The 5000 series are for those servers that have only two sockets, or their mid-tier servers. And as I mentioned before, we expect to see more later this year or early next year, where they would be four-socket or larger, and those will all have a 7000 series. But within that, they've reserved the model numbers 500 to 599 for this Nehalem core. So if it's a one-socket server, it'll be in that range of 3500 to 3599. Or if it was a two-socket server, it'll be 5500 to 5599. It'll be the model numbers for this new Nehalem. And if you find the customer has those model numbers, you'll need to make sure they license at 70 PBUs per processor core. However, if they have any other model number for their x86 processor cores or any AMD Opteron processor in there today, it's only 50 PBUs per processor core. So we did not increase the PBUs needed for the previous Xeon processor cores or the existing AMD processor cores. Only these new Nehalem chips that have those model numbers that end in, 500 to 599, those are the only models that need to have 70 PBUs per core. And you can see we have an excerpt from the latest PBU table that adds to it those model number requirements. So you can always check on the PBU page where we keep the latest table to know exactly the model numbers that need the 50 and which model numbers need the 70 PBU per processor core. Now, in addition to the fact that we've increased the PBUs, we really want you to be able to focus with your customers on the fact that there's such a significant performance improvement that they're going to require fewer cores to run the same workload, and we talk about this on slide 9, the next slide. So as we've spoken to you over the last few years, PBUs are based on the processor capacity available. And because these processor cores are so much faster and can run such a much larger workload, the customers quite likely will actually see the number of PVUs they need to use, to deploy for a particular workload decrease when they run these new processor cores. So where they might have needed, four cores before, now they probably only need half of those. And the total number of PVUs to support that workload will decrease. But the other thing that you need to make sure that they're aware of, and this is where you can really add value in the relationship with your customers, is make sure that the software folks in your customers' organizations are talking to the hardware folks. And as those hardware folks plan to make replace the older x86 hardware, make sure they understand the impact that new hardware with more cores per chip will have on software licensing. And make sure that your software teams plan for that and either use virtualization technologies or shift workloads around so they can most effectively spend their software dollars. So our strategy fundamentally is to talk to our customers about our pricing strategy and how by requiring fewer processor cores for the workloads, they'll actually see a reduction in most cases in the number of PVU licenses they need. So capacity planning becomes even more important than it's ever been as customers start to implement these new Xeon, or codenamed Nehalem, processor cores in their servers. And with that, let's go ahead and move on to slide 10 and begin to talk about the subcapacity announcements that we made on April 7th. And there were a number of very significant announcements, and we'll cover them on this slide, slide 10, and the next slide. But first, here on slide 10, the first part of this announcement is that we've made essentially all of the PVU-based products in software's portfolio, IBM software's portfolio, eligible for subcapacity licensing. There are just a handful which are not eligible, and those tend to be products which are not it's not possible to run them in a virtualized environment. They have to be run in real time, right on the operating system on the server. Can't have a virtualization technology there. But we've expanded to nearly all the PVU products in our portfolio, now eligible for subcapacity licensing. And in doing that, we wanted to simplify the ordering and the administration of the part numbers. So since they're all essentially eligible, we have eliminated the dual part number structure where we had one set of part numbers for the full capacity version of the product and a separate set of part numbers for the subcapacity version of the products. So we're eliminating those old subcapacity part numbers, and what we've thought of historically as the full capacity part number will become the part number for both full capacity and subcapacity. Now, if your customer has purchased subcapacity part-numbered products before, that isn't a problem at all. Those existing PVU license entitlements can be used for full cap or subcap, regardless of which part number the customer originally bought. And if your customer had bought those subcapacity part numbers in the past, the next time they renew their subscription and support after July 1st of this year, they'll find that that new SNS entitlement will automatically be converted to the full capacity subscription and support part numbers with that renewal. So again, the license itself will stay. Doesn't matter whether it was originally subcap or full cap, but the SNS renewals will become the full cap part number with their first renewal that takes place after July 1st of this year. Of course, just because we've eliminated the subcapacity part numbers, that doesn't mean that customers can use those the full capacity part number products in subcapacity mode if they have not signed the subcapacity attachment to the Passport Advantage Agreement. That is still a requirement to use these products in subcapacity mode. And we have some other requirements that we'll go over in just another page or two. But important they continue to agree to the terms in the attachment. So we think that with these two changes, it makes it a whole lot easier for customers to plan for virtualization, knowing that essentially our entire portfolio of PVU products are eligible to run in those subcapacity modes. Second, we think we've simplified the ordering and the tracking of those products by eliminating the need to have two different part numbers for what was essentially the same product, the only difference being whether it was deployed in a full capacity mode or in a subcapacity mode. And then the third real advantage here is that if your customers are beginning to deploy subcapacity, they no longer need to worry about converting those existing licenses to the subcapacity part numbers. So we think that's cut down on some of the administration, both at order time and down the road when they're trying to ensure that they're in compliance. But I mentioned that we had another significant portion of this announcement, so let's move to slide 11 to talk about those. So the other thing we did was we significantly expanded the number of virtualization technologies which are allowed within the subcapacity offering. And you see the list on this page, starting with the Citrix Xen server, going through Red Hat's Linux, which is a Xen implementation, Microsoft's Hyper-V, which came out last year, the latest version of VMware Server, and additionally, for x86 servers in both Windows and Linux, when customers find themselves in this situation where they replaced a two-socket server that was a couple years old with a brand-new two-socket server and discovered that because those servers now have quad-core chips as standard in them, they've found the number of processor cores in the server doubled, yet they aren't yet using virtualization technologies. There are operating system commands, and for some vendor servers, there are BIOS settings which allow the customer to actually turn off some of those processor cores. And in an x86 environment, we're going to allow those as well. And you can find more details on what the operating system commands are for both Windows and Linux on the subcapacity website. Now, it's our intention to support all of those new virtualization technologies with the IBM License Metric tool, which I'm sure you know is required when customers run our products in subcapacity mode. We'll support them somewhere in the second half of 2010. What we do is once we're sure that we know exactly how to support it within the ILMT product to be able to track the license usage in each of those virtualization technologies, we're going ahead and announcing them, allow the customers to use them using our manual license tracking rules, which are described on the website, and then the ILMT development team puts it into their plan to provide that support in a future release. But this allows the customers to take advantage right away of those virtualization technologies and then get the added benefit of the ILMT license tracking as soon as it can be made available, as I said, in 2010. Now, also with this announcement, we've reconfirmed that ILMT will be supporting VMware's ESX server environment in a virtualized environment shortly, a little bit later this year in the third quarter, and that there are some PowerVM technologies, which we issued a statement of direction for last year. And again, we're reconfirming that those will also be fulfilled in that release that comes out in the third quarter of this year. So with this portion of the announcement, we took what had already been an industry-leading support for virtualization technologies, and we significantly expanded that far beyond what anybody else in the industry supports. So widest range of virtualization technologies are supported with our licensing, and keep that in mind when we get to the Oracle example a little bit later in this deck. And it gives the customer the flexibility to use the virtualization technology which makes the most sense for them, either because they've got some skills with it already or they have a particular workload that has been validated in one virtualization technology and not others. Just increases the flexibility that the customer has to use the virtualization technique which makes the most sense for them. Now let's go ahead and move to the next page, slide 12. And I'm not going to go through this slide in detail, but just want to remind you that when the customer agrees to the subcapacity terms in the subcapacity attachment, there are a series of things that this means. And you see it here in the list. They need to make sure the products are and the technologies are supported, and all list of all those supported technologies and products are on the website. And as I already mentioned, they agree to use the IBM license metric tool and maintain those reports that they generate through the tool for a minimum of 2 years, just in case of an audit. Remind you that they don't have to submit those reports to IBM regularly anymore. They only have to provide them to the auditor should they be audited. And in those cases where the ILMT tool does not yet support the virtualization technology, as I mentioned, we have the manual tracking rules. And you see the extensive list of virtualization technologies that we support there on the bottom of the chart. But I suspect many of you are also wondering how we're going to tell our customers, you know, is it entirely up to you to let them know about the changes we're making? And if we move to slide 13, there are notification letters that are being sent to all Passport Advantage customers. They began going out last week. It will take, just given the volume of the letters worldwide, it's going to take a few weeks to get them all out. But we are going to send letters to every Passport Advantage customers that first is going to tell them about these announcements we've just been discussing, the expanded list of eligible products, let them know that it's not just that limited list that we had before, but it's virtually our entire PBU portfolio. Tell them about the additional virtualization technologies we've announced, and talk about how we've simplified the tracking and reporting over the last couple of years, where they no longer need to register with our server, they no longer need to submit reports as we used to require customers to do, but they just have to now save them in case of an audit. And to support these new terms, there is a new subcap attachment that's being made available, and we're making sure customers are aware of that and letting them know what the terms of that new attachment are, and that those terms will become effective 90 days after we notify them. They will automatically become effective, that those will be the new terms. And we don't expect any customers to have any concerns about this, because, in fact, these terms are much more customer-friendly than the old terms were. Now, you will find that depending on when your customer signed the terms, these may not seem so new. For instance, most of these terms were in the subcap attachment that became available last September, in September of 2008. So if they signed since then, they're okay. But these new terms will apply to anyone who signed the subcapacity attachment prior to September of last year, 90 days after we notify them. Also, in that letter, we point them to the websites, both for processor value units and for subcapacity licensing, where they can see the latest table, et cetera. Again, trying to just point them to the source of the most current information all the time. Now, we also think it's important for you to be able to see what was in those letters. So on our subcapacity website, there is a link to the subcapacity attachments. This would be off the main external and internal pages. In both cases, it's available. So that if you click on that link for the subcapacity licensing attachments, which is under Essentials on both of those internal and external pages, it takes you to a page that not only allows you to get all of the subcapacity attachments in all the languages that they are available in, but above those attachments, you will see another link where it says the April 2009 customer notification letters. And if you click on that link, it will take you to all of the letters, again, in the same languages that the attachments are available, so you can actually read the text of the letter that was sent to your customer. And that really concludes the coverage of the recent announcements. But I want to take just a moment or two to talk about a comparison of our licensing to Oracle's. And we start this on slide 14. So very recently, Oracle announced Well, I guess I should start, and if you're not familiar with the way Oracle is licensed, although they've recognized some performance differences in their licensing structure where relatively faster cores required more licenses and fewer cores, they did it through something they called a processor factor. So essentially you had to multiply a license by a fraction to figure out exactly how many licenses you needed on a particular technology. And Oracle did something that we hope never to have to do, which is they increased an existing system that's in the marketplace. They increased the number of licenses by raising that factor. So for both the IBM Power 6, used in the Power Systems brand, and the System Z10, they just increased the factor by a third that customers require. Now, from the best we can tell, although Oracle has not confirmed it publicly, this increase is retroactive, so customers already have Oracle products deployed on these systems were essentially, we believe, hit with an increase in the number of licenses. Of course, we have not changed the licenses required for any of the technologies in the marketplace, any of the processor cores. You'll also find that they now require the customers to use the x86 model numbers to determine the processor factor, just like we do. Now, although they didn't raise that processor factor for Nehalem, it clearly signals their intent to do that in the future. And since they've just demonstrated that they will retroactively increase that processor factor for existing customers, there's no reason to believe that they won't also do that for their customers running on the Nehalem chip. The really big difference, though, from a when you compare especially in the virtualization area, is the very few number of virtualization technologies that Oracle supports, while we have that extensive list I showed you a couple of slides ago. Essentially, Oracle only allows hard partitions, except for when you use their own virtualization offering. It's a form of Xen called Oracle VM. Now, they make the license free, but they require you to have to pay for support for that. Where, of course, we make, we don't have any specific virtualization technology. There's no charge you need to give to us to be able to use our products. We don't charge a premium at all. Even the tool is free, the IBM license metric tool, and there is no support cost for that tool either. That is also free. So fundamentally, we have just a much better licensing stance when you get to the virtualized world than Oracle does. But let me jump back on slide 15 to talk again just for a moment about that increase in the number of licenses they need per core. So I mentioned that they have this thing called a processor factor. And for Power 6 and for the Z10, System Z10, they increase that factor from 0.75 to 1.0. So if your customer was running on a four-processor core Power 6 server, they would have seen the total number of licenses they need go up by a third in comparison to where IBM's been. And with our PBU structure, we were already cheaper than them before they raised their factor. Of course, this is using the suggested retail price. Already significantly cheaper, and now that they've increased that factor, our advantage becomes much greater there. You can see that they are almost 50% more expensive than we are on the Power 6 for WebLogic versus WebSphere App Server. So a significant price advantage for IBM even before they raised their processor factor, and now it's an enormous price advantage. And finally, to wrap up the Oracle portion of the presentation, if you move to slide 16, I mentioned that we support many more virtualization technologies than Oracle does. And where this probably shows, it comes out as the biggest issue for your customers is with VMware, because VMware is what's called a soft partitioning technology or a software-only partitioning technology. Oracle doesn't support it at all. So if your customer had a situation where they had a choice between deploying a workload that needed two processor cores, two x86 processor cores in a VMware virtual machine. They could run it on IBM using WebSphere, or they could run it on Oracle, run it using WebLogic. If the configuration was otherwise exactly the same, a two virtual CPU virtual machine, which translates to two processor cores at its maximum capacity, you would find that in the IBM world, with our subcapacity licensing, customers would only have to license to two physical processor cores, which is the most resource that virtual machine could use at its peak capacity. However, Oracle doesn't care that only two processor cores could be used. In fact, they require the customer to license for all eight cores that you see in this example, even though the customer is only using the two cores to run their workload. So again, we have a significant advantage against Oracle when it comes to a virtualized environment. Well, to ensure that we leave a few minutes for questions and answer, let's go ahead and wrap this up on slide 17. So to summarize what we've talked about today, I've explained to you how the new Xeon processor chip, known as Nehalem, which contains usually four cores. They do have a dual-core version, but generally you're going to find the quad-core version deployed, has a significant performance improvement, and we've given a really terrific, by a factor of two, we've improved the price performance with our PVU rating for this new Xeon Nehalem processor core. And for subcapacity, now nearly all of our PVU-based products are eligible. We've reduced it so there's only a single part number for both subcapacity and full capacity deployments, making it much simpler to administer and to order and to manage. And finally, we've expanded the number of virtualization technologies significantly, especially in the x86 world. Again, just a reminder, before your customers can take advantage of subcapacity, you need to be sure that they have agreed to the subcapacity terms that are in the subcapacity attachment to the Passport Advantage Agreement. And, of course, one of those terms is the agreement to use the IBM License Metric tool for all of the virtualization technologies that it supports. You will find then there are two more pages which point you to some additional resources. The first page for your use to the internal websites, and then the final page for websites that you can give your customers, talk about not only the processor value unit licensing structure itself, but subcapacity licensing, and for those who want to know more about the IBM License Metric tool, a direct pointer to that. And with that, I think we've covered it. And Jamie, if you'd be kind enough to go ahead and open the lines for questions, we'll take all your questions.
Thank you, sir. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press your star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function has been turned off to ensure that our equipment can hear your signal. Again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. And we'll pause now to give everyone a chance to signal. And again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. As we come to your phone, a voice prompt will let you know that your phone line is open and ready to ask a question. Please simply state your name and then proceed with your question. And we'll take our first caller. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Deb Warburton in Melbourne, Australia. To do with the license metric tool for subcapacity, is it going to be possible for clients to download the tool from their download site without now having to purchase, even though for $0, the license and the SMS renewals for the product?
The tool itself, because it's free, can be downloaded, but even though it's free, it still needs an order for the LMT part number. Now, again, remember that LMT is useful not only in a subcapacity environment, but customers are also welcome to use it for free to track their full capacity PVUs. So as long as they've got any of our PVU software products, they are more than welcome to download it for free at any time. All they've got to do is put in an order for it. And again, it's an order for a free item, but that's just the way our systems work. And then they'll be able to download it electronically.
And the reason for that, Roger, is because this product is supported just like DB2 and WAS and Domino are supported. And so in order to establish that support entitlement, you have to have the license record on the Passport Advantage system.
Okay, because we have some situations here in Australia where a client has let the SMS for that tool lapsed because they basically had no idea that they had it registered on their site. Is it easier for us now to tell them to go online onto their PA online site and basically purchase a new license for $0, or should we go through the hassle of reinstating or renewing and opening up old records to renew their current licenses?
It'd probably just be easier to place a new order because depending on how old that one is, you probably run into, even though we use the same part numbers for ILMT that for the previous product, ITLCM, for IBM software, the same part numbers are there, it'd probably just be easier to place a new order.
Okay, and that includes for new purchases as well? Because when in the old system they had to order a sub-capacity part number, sales support were aware when they were doing their first purchase for a subcap part, so we would add that part number to their order. Now, if they agree to the subcap T's and C's, let's say today, ready to maybe next year use it, we're not going to know when they commence, so to prompt them to order that free part.
Right. It's up to the customer. It's now the customer's responsibility. IBM is not enforcing any ordering of ILMT.
Okay. Thank you.
And we'll take our next caller. Please go ahead.
Hello. This is Ishida from Software Group Japan. Just a simple question. Can we use Express Software on a virtual CPU so long as the partition is under 200 bar unit, no matter what the machine is, how large it is?
Ishida-san, the answer is yes.
Great.
You still have the PBU caps for the total number, but yes, you can run them now in subcap mode.
Big news. Thank you very much.
Just to make sure we're clear on that point, Express products are not allowed to run on any size server, right? The size of the server is still small, right? Limited by, you know, the maximum cap of PVUs, right? So, you know, you can't run Express products on a server that has, let's say, 64 cores with a partition that has less than 200 PVUs. The server size cannot be larger than 200 PVUs in your example.
Yeah, so thank you very much.
And again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone telephone if you'd like to ask a question at this time. And we'll pause for a few moments. And, sir, I have no further questions at this time.
All right. Well, in case you get any questions that come to mind later, if you go to the internal subcapacity website page and you look down at the very bottom of the seller resources, you will see a section called Ask a Question, and it provides the subcapacity licensing ID where you can send questions if you've got them. So don't hesitate to send a note if you get questions that come up following this call. Also, the recording for this call, as well as the other two calls we're doing around the world, will be put up on that subcapacity internal website within just a few days. And with that, I thank you very much on behalf of all of us here on the call from the worldwide pricing strategy team. Thank you for taking the time to come hear about the new announcements, and we wish you best of luck. Have a good day.
And that does conclude our conference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.